episode number 62 of the Mitch and Mills Bull Show. We're not experts, we're not journalists, we're not insiders, but we are two, sometimes three guys that love talking about your Chicago Bulls. Nils back the night! My name is Nils, and we're giving Mitch and E a breather on today's show because unlike Bulls coach Tom Thibodeau, we're trying to manage minutes here. You know, we try to keep our guys fresh because you're in the middle of a stretch that we're calling the starting five. Five pods in 5 days to get you ready for the upcoming Bulls season. In the fourth spot on today's episode, which I guess would be John Paxson, BJ Armstrong, Ron Harper, depending on your preferred championship Bulls team, Ricky O'Donnell of SB Nation and bloggable.com will be joining me to talk a little Derrick Rose closing out the Thunder, predictions for the upcoming season, the landscape of the East, and maybe even a little Chicago Bears. But before we get to Ricky, I do want to make sure that I show some love to the rest of our affiliate sites. That'd be GoWhereHipHop.com, BullsPodcasters.com, and ShyCitySports.com. Also, if you've been listening to our podcast this week, by now I'm sure you've heard of our first ever Bulls team trivia contest on Monday, October 28th at State Bar in Lincoln Park, where the winners will receive a whopping $500. Straight cash, homie. I won't go into any further details on it because I know we've been a little redundant on every single episode promoting the hell out of the event. But if you want more information, all you got to do is check out our own spot at thebullshow.com and follow us on Twitter at thebullshow. All right, so without further ado, I will give Ricky a call on the other side of this break and we'll see you right back on the Bull Show. So let's get on with it. We could have been somebody. Said you had to tell somebody. Let's take it back to the first party when you tried your first mile. Right, I am on the line. Writer Ricky O'Donnell, also a contributor to bloggable.com. Ricky, welcome back to the show. How are you?
Thanks for having me, Nils. How's it going?
Not too bad. Not too bad. Of course, we are recording immediately after the Bulls' 104-95 victory against the Oklahoma City Thunder in preseason action. The Bulls, of course, keeping their undefeated preseason alive. Derrick Rose happened tonight again, taking over
Derrick
in the fourth
Rose
quarter.
Has been happening, yeah.
Yeah, he came down to earth a little bit with a at least for the first three quarters a tough shooting performance, but then took over with about 4 minutes left, scoring half of his 26 points in that final stretch. What I want to do is start off there. You know, Derrick Rose has been highly efficient, didn't have the best performance tonight, still took over, even though it was against Thunder's B squad. He's off to this tremendous start. In your last post on bloggable.com, you broke down his performance by the numbers and how just historic it really has been in this preseason. How much of this is actually representative of how good Derrick Rose can be versus unreasonable expectations this season?
Well, I think that this has really just been building inside of Bulls fans specifically, but even NBA fans league-wide, because there was so much anxiety and so much talk over Rose's decision to sit out for last year. Mm-hmm. People are hungry for this, and really, he looks better than I expected him to be honest. Like, you would think that after not playing a basketball game for 17 months, 18 months, he's been saying, too, that you know he didn't play 5-on-5. The first time he played 5-on-5 was the first day of training camp.
Yep.
But Rose just looks so natural out there, and it's pretty clear that his athleticism, his first step, which is always like part of what made him so special, is there all the way. He doesn't seem to be tentative at all going into the lane. He's been taking on contact from Roy Hibbert and basically every team he's been playing. He's thrown his body around, I don't want to say recklessly, but mm-hmm. It seems like there's nothing in his head holding him back from challenging front court members of opposing teams at the rim and still being able to find a way to finish just as he's always been able to do. So when you ask if his incredibly strong performance so far in the preseason is more of an effect of, you know, the competition he's facing in the preseason or him being back, really I just look at it from a physical standpoint, which was always a concern with Rose, right? Like coming back from this long layoff. Physically, to me, he looks all the way back. Now, he missed one game in this preseason with soreness in his knee, and I think that you're just going to have to pencil that in from time to time. Like, when that happened, people were really freaking out, you know, on the little corner of Twitter that we occupy amongst Bulls fans. People were getting really concerned about that, and I really didn't get too concerned at the time, and I'm still not too concerned. I think that that's just going to happen sometimes. The Bulls have, what is it, 17 back-to-backs this year? Like, they're going to have to give him, you know, 7-8 days off just to keep him fresh and healthy for the playoffs, which is really all that matters.
Yeah, especially with him saying that if he needed to play, he could have played. I believe that he was quoted as saying that. You know, what's interesting is, you know, we scoffed at him being at 110% and better than he once was. But it's sure looking like that. And I think what I'm most impressed about is just his offensive versatility. You know, not only is he being the Derrick Rose of old, just attacking the rim with reckless abandon, but also he's getting his points in a wide variety of ways, whether it's at the free throw line, from behind the arc, coming off the pick and roll, in transition. I mean, it's pretty amazing what he's been able to do with, like you said, not playing a basketball game in about 18 months.
Absolutely. And I look at Derrick Rose. I've known who Derrick Rose was since he was a sophomore in college, I believe. Or sophomore in high school, I mean, when he was on Simeon.
When he was beefing with Evan Turner?
Oh, yeah. Well, that was when he was a senior, of course. He was beefing with Evan Turner, yeah. But, you know, way back in his early days. So, you know, following Rose's development, I really think that where you see Brissett now is, I don't know if he turned 25 yet, but he's got to turn 25 in a couple of days or whatever it is. It's really a testament to just his drive to get better, how much better he's gotten overall. I mean, he entered the league as someone without a jump shot. And he was still pretty damn good those first 2 years with a very shaky jumper. He was still, you know, putting up 20 points his second year, leading the team to the playoffs as a rookie and in his second year. And then the third year when he won MVP, why did he win MVP? He did it because he was able to improve his three-point shooting, and he was able to improve himself drawing fouls, which is, you know, a big step taking someone from a very good player to a great player.
Yep.
You look at him now, and it just seems like he's refined both of those skills. Like, the first step is there all the way. He's going to be able to get by anyone. Today, he had one move where he split two double teams and still finished at the basket. Like, there were four dudes trying to stop him, and they really had no prayer of taking Rose.
Don't forget about that one move where I think he dislocated Reggie Jackson's shoulder looking sideways.
God.
Or I should say neck.
Reggie Jackson was very, very close to falling on his ass during that play. It would have been the best gift of the NBA preseason.
Right. So the Thunder weren't at full strength tonight, obviously missing Westbrook, but also Ibaka and Cephalosha had the night off. Was there anything that you saw watching the game that you liked as the Bulls continued their undefeated preseason?
Yeah, I really liked the ball movement offensively. Like, one of the storylines this year, and it hasn't been reported on heavily, but it's been mentioned by Casey Johnson and a few of the other beat reporters, is that the Bulls' offense has started to incorporate more of the Spurs motion sets. And there's a video on this on SB Nation done by Coach Nick of B-Ball Breakdown, where he's been looking at some of the preseason plays and showing, like, the plays that the Spurs run and how the Bulls are incorporating the sort of off-the-ball movement and, you know, making it a little less stagnant than their offense has been previously. I think that Rose being out last year actually helps contribute to some of that, too, because last year, of course, without Rose, Noah was handling the ball a lot. Noah was the facilitator at the free throw line so often. He averaged 4 assists a game, which is unheard of for a center. So I think when the Bulls finally do have that lineup at full strength, which the five guys they plan on starting this year have never played on a basketball court together, a preseason game and a real game, whatever, when they finally have all those guys, I would expect that this more free-flowing offense that is still obviously the onus is going to be on Rose to create, but the ball's going to be moving and there's going to be, you know, side pick and roll action. They're going to be able to, there's going to be people cutting off the ball. Everyone's going to be spreading the floor. I really think their offense is going to be deadly this year, and I would not be surprised if it hit the top five mark again like it did the last season. Rose was even semi-healthy when he played 40 games.
Yeah, if there's any silver lining to Rose skipping out all of last season, it's like the Bulls' core learned to play without him and not be so heavily reliant on him. And we're beginning to see that materialize here in the preseason with their more fluid, crisp ball movement, a lot of cutting, a lot of motion type offense. So absolutely. And you mentioned, you know, this their projected starting lineup still hasn't played together yet with the injuries to Noah and Butler. But something that I kept my eye on tonight was just seeing how Butler and Rose performed, given that Butler had missed the last three games. And Jimmy came to play today. He had another efficient game where I felt like every time I looked up, he was drawing a foul and going to the free throw line. 12 points on 4-for-6 shooting. Missed a couple free throws. But, you know, the one thing I wanted to ask you, with Jimmy, there seems to be a sort of disconnect between the basketball blogging community and the mainstream national media on Jimmy Butler. You know, the former, of course, which I guess would include us, more so you than me, giving Jimmy a ceiling as high as almost Scottie Pippen. It sounds outrageous to say, but, you know, I've seen that float around, and maybe I've just been telling that to myself. And then there's the latter, almost suggesting he's going as far as maybe he's just a flash in the pan, that last year's breakout season was maybe a bit fluky. Where do you stand on that, and why do you think Jimmy's projections have had such a wide range?
I looked into this, and I wrote something about this a few weeks ago, but I really think that if you're going to create the ideal backcourt mate for Rose, that Butler is almost the perfect person. Rose, when he won the MVP, had the second highest usage rate in the league behind Kobe. He was, you know, 30% of the Bulls' shots when he was on the court was ending with D. Rose taking it. And Butler had the lowest usage rate on the entire team last season for the Bulls, like lower than Heinrich, lower than Muhammad. So essentially, given that Rose is such a ball-dominant guard, and like when Derrick Rose is on the court, the Bulls are Derrick Rose's team. I think that's even been very evident this preseason. Like, all of the attention is on him. Everyone's looking at him. It's his team, you know? Right. You want someone who can complement him without needing the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that Bulls fans have been complaining about the last few years, as the Bulls have failed to, you know, win a title, advance to the finals, is that they don't have a second guy you can give it to in isolation who can make things happen.
Right.
To me, Rose is going to be playing 40 minutes in the playoffs. You want a guy who can impact the game without needing the ball, without doing the Carmelo Anthony triple jab step, taking an off-balance shot. You want someone like Jimmy who's going to not take bad shots, who's going to be able to space the floor incredibly. He hit like 47% of his threes after the All-Star break last year, which is just ridiculous.
Right.
And there's only a handful of guys who you can really come up with who can defend players like the big wing you're going to see in the East, LeBron, Paul George, Danny Granger, Paul Pierce, all those guys. Jimmy is just an ideal fit, and the Bulls are so lucky to have gotten him with the 30th pick. It's skill, too. I mean, they're the ones who chose him, of course, but I don't even think Foreman or Paxson would have expected him to be this good this quick entering into his third season.
Right, right. We just got to figure out what to do about his hair, and then
we can move forward. His hair is hilarious. It's just on point right now.
I bet Carlos Boozer's pretty jealous of it.
He really is. They should. If you remember when the Cubs were really good in maybe like, you know, 2003, they used to give away Matt Clement chin hair. I want the Bulls to give away Jimmy Butler muffin top hair.
That is a great
selling those.
That is a great idea. We'll need to get the Bulls PR department on that. Make sure that it's a United Center giveaway. You know, we know about the health. It's good to see Jimmy back. Obviously, Joe Kim's still battling his groin injury. Kirk was out tonight with a concussion. We know about the health issues. Unfortunately, they're rearing its ugly head right now, but better now than, you know, come May during the playoffs. Outside of health, what's your biggest concern going into the season for the Bulls?
Well, I think that, I really just am concerned that they will be healthy for postseason run. I feel like it's owed to Chicago sports fans, Bulls fans in general at this point. Outside of it, I mean, I guess front court depth is one of the reasons, but that kind of ties back into health as well. Just keeping Noah fresh, if they had a better backup center, someone who they trusted to play more than 15 minutes a game, 10 minutes a game, you would think they would put less pressure on Noah. I guess my biggest concern is that I think the top half of the East, you know, biggest concern besides your health, is that the top half of the East is really good. Mm-hmm. Like, the Nets have improved remarkably. When the Bulls played the Nets last year, the Bulls had a shell of their team. We're going to be laughing about the Bulls winning a playoff series with Nate Robinson and Marco Bellinelli 5 years from now when the Bulls have five titles. They did that by guarding three guys and ignoring Gerald Wallace, ignoring Reggie Evans, and, like, you know, anyone else who they knew just couldn't hit a jump shot.
Yep.
All five of those guys on the net can hit a jump shot, and all five of those guys can post you up. And people who are concerned about, you know, their coaching, will kid be able to do it? Like, if any five guys can coach themselves, like, it's those two, they're going to be running the show, and I think they're going to be able to play smart, effective basketball.
Yeah, and Mitch actually likes
to bring... great tip.
Yeah, Mitch, going back to the Nets, Mitch actually brings this up pretty often. You know, all of the coaching burden is not just going to fall on Jason Kidd. You mentioned the players on the court being coaches themselves, but also Kidd has a pretty much a co-head coach in Lawrence Frank assisting him in Brooklyn. So I feel like that group of guys is more likely to mesh much better than the last super team that formed, which were the Los Angeles Lakers. But continue. You were saying, were you saying the Heat or the Pacers?
Well, I was just going to say, the Pacers are really great, too, being able to get Granger back. And while I would put the Bulls ahead of the Pacers and the Nets, don't get me wrong, coming into this, and I think, you know, of course, the Heat have to be the team winning back-to-back titles. I don't think that it's a certainty the Bulls would beat the Pacers or the Nets in a playoff series. Like, I think that those teams would be a very tough out, no matter who they're playing. And either of those teams could knock off the Heat, too, I think. The field is just really strong this year, particularly the top four teams in the East. I don't think it's been this strong. I couldn't even tell you the last time. Maybe since the mid-90s or the late 90s. This is the strongest it's been. So while I am very optimistic with the Bulls' chances this year, I do think that there are three other very good teams just in the conference, and then, you know, four to six great teams out west as well.
How do you think the top four shake out when the regular season ends?
I have the Bulls with the number one seed, just because when D-Rose plays, the Bulls just win a bunch of games. And, you know, they did it the first 2 years with Rose and Thibodeau. So I have them as the number one seed, of course, but Noah's groin injury is already a little bit troubling.
Yeah, there's some crazy stat out there. Maybe you know it, or maybe I'm just making this up. But when Rose is healthy and being coached by Tibbs, the Bulls have won like 80% of their games. It's something ridiculous.
Yeah, it's absurd. They showed that stat on the first preseason game. And I tweeted it, and it's just mind-blowing. Like, if that stat is accurate, it's like, it makes me think about if that's even possible to be accurate, like going back and looking at the last couple of years. But really, the Bulls have just been, their winning percentage has just been through the roof with Thibodeau and Rose. And then after them, I would say probably the Heat number two, the Pacers number three, and the Nets number four.
Mm-hmm.
The Knicks seem like the obvious five seed, and then the bottom half of the conference is where it gets interesting. But
yeah, I think the consensus is we have the top four, and then the Knicks, I'm putting them at the fraudulent five spot.
Yeah, and I think all those teams are going to be very, very tough in the playoffs.
Yeah, so, you know, outside of that group, is there any dark horse team in the East that either can crack the top five, and I know that's pretty unlikely, or maybe just a team in the East that you're just excited to see?
I would say the Pistons. The Pistons have Andre Drummond, whose future is as bright as any player in the league, really, now. He shot 36% on free throws last year, but the guy is 280 pounds, 7 feet tall, and can do under-his-leg dunks. He's absurdly athletic, and really, that's the trump card, having someone that big, that athletic, who's just going to have a physical advantage over everyone he plays. Combine that with what else Detroit did in the offseason. Brandon Jennings, everyone clowns, but he's better than Brandon Knight, right? Yeah. Like, I would rather have Jennings than Knight, I would say. Josh Smith is miscast as a three. I think that most savvy basketball observers would realize he's probably a four, but I'll take Josh Smith. Like, Josh Smith does a lot of good things for someone who takes a few too many outside shots, and I don't know, maybe it won't be a good fit there because they just have so many bodies in the front court with Monroe, who's a very skilled passer. He's another 250-pound, you know, 6'10" guy. We'll see if he even makes it through the season. I think that he could be a trade candidate. But the Pistons are going to be goofy fun, and I think they're also going to be better than a lot of people are expecting.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how Brandon Jennings and Josh Smith mesh. I feel like, especially after watching that one preseason game where the Pistons visited the United Center, you know, Josh Smith was doing Josh Smith things that he was prone to do in Atlanta, not good things, where he was settling for outside jumpers. And I know it's just preseason. He didn't look like he was totally into it. But if he is going to be relegated to that three spot and hover on the perimeter, I think the Pistons are in trouble. But I do like – they have athletes. They have athletes that can play, and we'll see how they'll be able to channel that. Maurice Cheeks, their head coach, kind of has a tough job ahead of him.
Absolutely. He's got some talent to work with. But they just seem like the one team to me in the East. And, you know, maybe the Cavs, maybe the Wizards, there's some other teams. But they just have a lot of upside, strictly yeah. because of their size, their athleticism. You know, that team could do some stuff if they can stretch the floor a little bit and – you know, if KCP steps up as the ninth pick in this draft, he could be someone who turns out to be a really good pro shooting guard. There's some pieces there. There's something for Mo Cheeks to work with, I think.
Yeah, I was actually going to lean more towards the Wizards as kind of a dark horse, high potential type team, just because, you know, they should have been a playoff team, in my opinion, if John Wall had stayed healthy. I think they had, when he was on the court, they had a pretty good record. And I think that pairing him with another year of Bradley Beal, as well as Nene, you know, holding down that front court, that's a team to keep an eye on, as well. Maybe a possible first round opponent, at least for the Bulls. So we'll see where that goes in terms of those Eastern Conference teams outside the top four, the top five. I want to move on to some of the rumors and speculations about player movement and trades. You know, Marcus Teague recently has surfaced in recent reports. You know, Luol Deng is obviously entering his contract year. Are there any moves you'd like to see the front office make this season? Or do you think this is the team that they should stand pat with and give it a go?
No, I don't want anyone else. I just want this team to stay healthy, and I want them to get one fair crack at it. There's been, you know, Teague is sort of a polarizing player, I feel like. Amongst Bulls fans, usually fans of a team love their young players, and Teague is so young. I think he just turned 20, or he's not even 20 yet. But
yeah, he can't go to the bars right now. That's how young he is.
Right. It's ridiculous. But Heinrich's not under contract next season. And Teague, you know, you don't want to... The rookie-scale contract is sort of set where you get a team gets a huge boost. Someone can contribute right away, like the Bulls being able to pay Jimmy Butler, you know, $1.3 million for 3 years of great play is just like such a coup for the team, especially a team that's moving over the luxury tax. So it's kind of a bummer that it doesn't look like Teague's going to be able to produce too much. Probably not. He didn't produce anything last year. You don't know how much he'll give you this year, just because he's going to be the third, maybe even the fourth point guard on the depth chart with all this Mike James talk lately. But he's the one who could be a solid backup point guard, I think, particularly for the year after this year, when Heinrich's been so injury-prone, you just don't know if you can count on him. I don't think that Heinrich's going to be someone who they're looking to... I mean, I don't know if they're going to be looking to resign him a year from now. Who knows what's going to happen. But Teague is a guy who I think could back up D-Rose and do a hell of a job on the second unit. It really gives the Bulls another change of pace type of look. Bulls are over the luxury tax, so I can see why they would want to, you know, maybe shed some salary that they don't think they need, but they wouldn't even really be shedding that much salary trading Teague, who was drafted at the very end of the first round. And Deng, I don't think they're going to trade either. They're just going to roll with this team and see what happens. So, No, I don't want anyone. I hope they don't trade Teague. I would be shocked if they traded Deng. Just roll with this crew.
I agree. I'm with you right there. Give me one bold prediction for the season.
So at work, we had to put down our predictions for the season, and there was 30 of us, and I believe I was one of two that has the Bulls winning the championship. So I guess there's my bold prediction for you.
You and Brian Crawford, man, we're gonna have to make our reservations at Grant Park and start popping bottles in June. Start planning.
Yeah, I'm ready for it. Well, you know, no team has reached the finals 4 years in a row since the Celtics in the 80s. It's just a really hard thing to do. The Heat are a great team. I'm a huge LeBron fan. I think LeBron is incredible. He's the best player, you know, since Jordan. No questions asked. So So if the Heat won again, it wouldn't be a surprise, and I don't think it would be that much of a disappointment, just because, you know, LeBron is so talented, but this is the strongest the field's ever been, and to me, this season comes down to the Heat versus the field. With so many strong challengers, I'll take the field for that, and I really believe the Bulls are the best team of the field, at least right now. Like, maybe DeAndre Jordan gets it together defensively. He certainly has the physical attributes to do it, and the Clippers are just a wrecking ball of a team. Or, you know, maybe no one can stop the Dwight, James Harden pick and roll. But right now, I don't know. I'm pretty optimistic about the Bulls, and everything I've seen in the preseason has only solidified that optimism.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, for those listeners and readers who aren't familiar with your work, you obviously are also a big Bears fan. You write a lot for SB Nation about the Chicago Bears. What's the bigger growing concern right now, Jay Cutler or Joakim Noah?
Let's think about this. The Bears' defense just isn't at a level right now where I think they could make the playoffs if Cutler was healthy. Certainly, they could probably win 10 games, but I don't know how far they could go in the playoffs when they're allowing 500 yards to the Redskins, the 1-4 Redskins. Pretty much at will. The Redskins were scoring at will. They had no chance to stop them. Noah's growing concern does worry me because that's an injury that can linger. Mm-hmm. And the last thing I want is for the Bulls to rush him back to the opening game or rush him back early in the season before that thing's fully healed. Because let's be honest, we know the Bulls are a great regular season team. They're not trying to prove that, like, you know, they had to during the first year Thibodeau was in town. I just want them to be healthy for the playoffs. Just one fair crack at it in the playoffs, even if that means sacrificing regular season wins and the Bulls come in third or fourth in the East. I'm fine with that as long as they enter the postseason healthy and everyone's good to go. I'd like to, you know, see them give it their best shot. Especially with Dane's impending free agency, you don't know what's going to happen. So I guess I'm not really answering this question. The bigger concern, I suppose, would be Cutler, just because they're in the middle of the season and the Bears could have definitely made the playoffs with him. Maybe they can still make it. I don't see it anymore, despite how well McCown played the first game.
Yeah, I don't know if it was just, you know, beginner's luck getting his first regular season action, but. I felt like there was a part of McCown's play that is just a testament to how much Trestman is that quarterback whisperer and is just an offensive quarterback guru. And, you know, possibly, and I'm a big Cutler fan. You know, I rock a Jay Cutler jersey. I rock the number six. But this could be a situation where if McCown does well, at least during the time Cutler's recovering, maybe the Bears front office feels like Jay isn't worth an extension after this year. So, you know, it's one of those things where I feel like in terms of what's more concerning, Joakim and Cutler, I agree with you. I'm more concerned about Joakim's injury just because I think the Bears, at least offensively, can hold the fort down based on, you know, what we've seen from Trestman this far. Of course, you know, that doesn't really speak to their main issue right now, which is their defense, but we'll see.
Yeah. Two things really quick on that. You mentioned Trestman, which is a huge reason for, you know, McCown's success and the Bears' success, really, in general, offensively. But the upgrade in talent over the last two offseasons, and the last offseason specifically, they rebuilt the entire line, four new linemen.
True.
And those guys are really good. They've given up the fourth least amount of sacks in the league, which is incredible. Trestman should get some credit for that, of course, but Kyle Longliver is always a reach of a first-round draft pick. It was great. Jordan Mills was great. The line has been fantastic, and just the receivers. You know, we're not throwing to Johnny Knox anymore. Cutler's got three big physical guys in Bennett, Jeffrey, and Marshall who can go up and get the ball, which just makes things so much easier, especially for someone like McCown stepping into a situation like this. However, my second point is that I do think that there's going to be there wasn't a substantial drop-off from Cutler to McCown against the Redskins after Cutler got hurt. They didn't lose because Cutler got hurt, but I think there will be. McCown's 34 years old, and he was a guy who was coaching high school football 2 years ago before the Bears gave him a call and got him out of retirement. So it's just, like, hard for me to expect him to go 14 for 20 for 200 yards and lead a couple scoring drives moving forward. I hope it happens, but it's just tough for me to count on.
Who's a better backup, McCown or Nazir Muhammad?
That's a great question. Preseason Nas or regular season Nas?
Oh, well, we know preseason Nas is a first ballot Hall of Famer. I'm talking regular
He's
season Nas.
They should really retire as number 48, right? I believe that's his number.
Yep. So it sounds like, you know, both the Bears and Bulls offenses are revamped this season, newly improved, but only one team, the Bulls, are still sticking to their identity of being this this gritty defensive team. But hopefully, you know, the Bears turn things around, get healthy, just like the Bulls, and we're celebrating both teams early next year.
Yeah, you know, the way the Bears have turned around the offensive line and turned around the offensive skill players, they can do that with the defense. The Bears could be in a very similar position a year or two from now, I think.
Absolutely. All right, Ricky, well, that's all I have for you. Anything else? Anything that you want to plug? Anything you want to share with our many listeners?
Can I plug the Mitch Don't Lie Twitter account?
Oh, absolutely. He'll appreciate that.
He's not here with us, but...
Yeah. See, this might be the first time that we're actually dapping someone up as opposed to just making fun of them. Usually when one of, whether it be E or Mitch or myself, when one of us is not on, the rest of us who are on the show just end up, you know, ripping him a new one. So, yeah, I guess we give him some props.
Well, we need some positive vibes at the end of this season, I think. We'll save the hate for the Heat and the Pacers and the Nets.
All right. That sounds good.
Oh, that Mitch Don't Lie Twitter account, people.
Yeah, make sure you check that out. All right, Ricky, appreciate your time. That was Ricky O'Donnell from SB Nation and Bloggable.com. Make sure you follow him on Twitter at @SBN_Ricky. Ricky, again, thank you so much, and we'll catch up with you during the season.
Yep, thanks for having me.